AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Indeed, Father's Day this weekend, eatlocalminnesota.com. All the restaurants featured this week. Go to eatlocalminnesota.com for more information. Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert. He's a noted author. You can find his books at Next Chapter Books in St. Paul. TotallyIowa.com as well. IowaWatch.org is his public service show that he has down in Iowa. And he joins us from KXEL, Cedar Falls, Waterloo. Hi, Jeff. How are you, my friend?
Matthew, not as good as you, but I keep trying.
Well, I appreciate it. Although I still think that we need to get your glasses fixed. All right. How about we start with breaking news? Howard Schultz, the Starbucks billionaire, is apparently putting his campaign on hold for the summer and laying off staff. He looks like he might be the first casualty in the campaign for 2020.
Well, and I'm not sure, did he ever officially announce that he was really, really running? I think he got as far as the exploratory committee. The key on Schultz is that he said, I'm running as an independent. And he was immediately told, if you do that, you're going to reelect the president. And he immediately started saying, well, I certainly won't do that. And so this looks like, you know, the graceful way to say, A, I'm spending way too much of my kids' inheritance on this foolish endeavor. And B, you cannot have two general election candidates against an incumbent and expect to win.
Well, now that you say that, it is interesting, the Quinnipiac poll that came on now, which is another thing I want to actually talk about today. Mm-hmm. When you look at it, things have definitely gotten bad for Trump. Now, he still is pulling, 41%. That's pretty much, you know, his max level in these polls. Now, and I think nationally, when they factor in all people in the country, they're feeling that his popularity is somewhere around 36-37% of the country. So that kind of factors out when you do this polling stuff. So, sure. But you know, so you're looking at his poll numbers are showing that he's at 40-41%. Meanwhile, what was initially only Biden, Sanders, O'Rourke, and Elizabeth Warren leading him, now a good chunk of the Democratic Party, when factored into head-to-head, is leading him. Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, Buttigieg, I believe is in there as well. There are multiple candidates. And right now it's not looking like any of the front runners are really, you know, going to be too much of a question on whether they can beat Trump. As of right now, they are all getting pretty good leads. Starting with the Trump side of this, are we just seeing what was inevitable, that you can basically have loyalty, but primarily through his trade policies in the Midwest and what can only be described as broken promises of jobs returning and stuff like this, and the tax increase that happened for most Americans? I just think that the shine is wearing off and you are starting to see some level of attrition of Trump fans.
Well, you and I have talked for 2 years about the fact that those who supported this president in the 2016 election would do so until they had to make a choice and had another alternative. In other words, they were not going to abandon him based on nothing, right? But once there is another election, once there is a choice, this person you voted for before or any host of other individuals – that's when you might see the erosion, right? Because you don't have to make a choice till you have to make a choice. I'm a little skeptical about national polls unless what they are doing is saying, let's go state by state and then count up electoral college votes. Because remember where Trump was in October of 2016. The math in individual states had to fall just right. And so that's the first thing that I look at. You know, let's not jump into words like landslide, because we don't elect a president by popular vote. We do by the Electoral College. That all said, is a caveat. That's just to – I want to temper the enthusiasm a little bit. The fact that you can name Democrats who are barely polling 1% in Iowa as opposed to other Democrats, but yet they would beat the president in an election. 2020 is going to be all about electability. It is going to be the Democrats deciding who their nominee is based upon who's got the best chance to win the White House. And the fact that so many of these individuals show up very favorably against the incumbent, that is the jolt that some of those campaigns needed. Because if their best claim is electability, That's the claim that's going to win. And look at what the folks at – and they've got so many sponsors on this. It's the Your Name Here Iowa poll anymore. Okay, it's CNN and MediaCom and the Des Moines Register and Zippy's Rib Shack and I don't know whoever.
Zippy's. I love Zippy's.
It's, you know, and they give you the moist towelettes, which is necessary. But the
– It smells like Elizabeth Warren. Anyway.
Oh, wow. By the way, have you shared with the audience the walk-up themes that these folks use?
No, really?
Have okay, I will send that to you. The short of it is today's Iowa Politics Report, shameless plug – I talk about some of these candidates and their walk-up music that they use Sunday in Cedar Rapids. Elizabeth Warren decided that the theme from the motion picture 9 to 5 fit her the best, which led to a whole lot of bad Jane Fonda memes. But let's move back to the topic at hand, which I probably forgot. No, it's a matter of the Iowa poll came out the day before that Democrat event. Okay, the Democratic Party of Iowa, Iowa Democratic Party Hall of Fame dinner, 19 of the 23 candidates showed up. And so they released a poll the night before, and it basically showed that only six had anything above 5%. Everybody else was mired at 1%. Well, that's a devastating blow if you're Beto O'Rourke or Cory Booker or any number of people. But the polls, these national polls that talk about electability, that's the oxygen you need to free up some fundraising dollars to decide, do I continue to push in Iowa? So far, the answer is yes. Yeah. Or do I say, you know what? I'll go see you in New Hampshire. However many of you are left after Iowa, I'll join you in New Hampshire. And that's not a bad secondary strategy for some of these folks.
Well, and the real winner is Iowa broadcasters who will get inundated with ads at this point. Going back
sitting in a studio that would like to see revenues go up, not enough of them.
But. Going back to Trump here, I mean, really, I think this is the reason why so many Republicans were screaming, do not start another trade war with Mexico. Arizona, Texas. Particularly, those are two states that the Republicans have to have. And this trade war is wildly unpopular in both of those states. And so this idea that he's just on a whim, and he did it, let's be honest, he did it to try to get Mueller off the front pages. I'm going to impose new tariffs on Mexico, got everyone scrambling to get Mueller off the front page. But the reality is that when even the Senate Republicans are like, no, we are not going to do this again. Plus, then you add in the fact that Wisconsin, I do not think, is going to fall the same way again. And Michigan, especially if he goes after Amish, who's still pretty popular in that state, like he's promising to go after him. And Pennsylvania, which has been a mess for the Republicans ever since Trump got elected. I think that they're seeing that this is going to be a tough enough fight as it is. You don't need to take two jewels from the Republican crown in Arizona and Texas and put them into play.
Absolutely right. And again, your analysis is spot on, except for the fact that nobody thought it would go the way it did in 2016. And so I'm just so nervous about so many of these states until you get far closer. You're right. That's the map. In order for Trump to win again, he's got to hold that base, right? He's got to hold those states. And there aren't that many. We talked about this some months ago. There aren't that many that are that much different. And so in one respect, you'd say, well, if he won this state in 2016, then he should win it again in 2020. Well, if 2016 was the aberration, you pretty quickly – I mean, he's either going to win by the skin of his teeth in 2020 or it's a landslide the other way. Mm-hmm. Just because, again, for the very states that you mentioned. This Mexico tariff thing, to me, in hindsight, was nothing more than a sham to get them to do something that they just weren't wrapping the bow on already. For months, the administration had been talking with the Mexican officials about all of the things that they've now agreed would happen. And when it didn't happen quickly enough, he said, okay, if you don't do something – now, again, nobody knew there were these conversations. He says, if you don't do something, I'm going to throw a tariff on. That brought them to the table to wrap up the last 1%. So in other words,
I'm going to correct you on that, because the Mexicans themselves have come on out and said, we had already agreed. This is not like it was in negotiations. They actually had agreements in place months and months ago. The only thing they added in was they made the decision themselves without the U.S. involved to offer more humanitarian aid and potential training and other things for the immigrants that are in Mexico. But that was more of an internal in-house thing. Trump had said that there's going to be a massive increase in ag. That didn't exist. He keeps promising that there's going to be this super secret, super deal that he keeps waving a piece of paper in everyone's house. There doesn't exist. I mean, the Mexicans themselves said all this had happened. I actually think it's different. I think he put this out there to get Mueller off the front page. And when the British tour blew up in his face and he didn't take the Mexican thing off the table, then all of a sudden he came back here and they had to save face. So they went back to look at these old trade agreements and rebranded them in an attempt to make it look like there was something new.
We're not that far apart. I mean, what I'm suggesting is there was stuff going along all along, and it wasn't either public or wrapped up or complete. And so then came this hollow threat to just force the issue to get it announced publicly. And so this is we were supposed to be led to believe that by this threat, people showed up for the first time and hammered out this agreement. I mean, that was what they were hoping would be the narrative. That got blown out of the water right away, mm-hmm. right? I mean, there's no way that, you know, these had been going on 4 months. There had been agreements, all of it just exactly as you say. But I say that he was using that as a way to push the calendar at the very least, all right? And it's again, the sort of thing where if he starts believing his own narrative, namely, I use tariffs, therefore I got my way, which we already know is a false narrative, but let's just go with that. What's to say he's not going – and this is the concern that many in the agricultural part of America, this is the concern they have, both parties, doesn't matter. If he thinks tariffs were the way to get things done with Mexico, if again he believes his narrative that it did, then he's bound to use it every single time he wants to do something. And I guarantee you the Chinese have a different culture, a different government, a different philosophy than the Mexican government. So the same strategy that in that narrative worked with regard to Mexico, it's not going to work with China. And the fear in rural America that I sense is, well, all right, we dodged a bullet on this one, but if he thinks that he's empowered to keep doing it because it worked, then we're going to have a real problem, because then there's a full absence of reality.
Well, and I look at it more. I think what had happened is he's desperate to save face after the Republican senators said there's no way over our dead body we're going to do this again. And so it feels far more like a 4-year-old soccer game that got rained out, so everyone gets a medal anyway, because it's a, you know, in that sort of thing. And this attempt to make it seem like, see, you're the winner. And I'm not sure. I will say this, and I would love to get your thoughts on this. When you talk, going back to Trump and the numbers, we have seen the last four presidents that were two-termers. Reagan was fairly popular when he got reelected, I think a year out beforehand. I mean, there were some questions, but he was still – I mean, I didn't see him not being at least competitive. You look at Clinton. He was – you know, even though he had his problems, he was still looking like he was going to win fairly easily. W was a little closer, and I would also say Obama was, but still they weren't – outnumbered like this. I have not in my lifetime, I can't remember a time where an incumbent was running this poorly on their numbers. Even Carter, when he lost, was still relatively close. It was that whole Iran-Contra thing that really kind of hurt him at the very end. And so when HW was – wasn't –
You said Iran-Contra and you meant Iran hostage.
Iran hostage, yes.
Yeah, I don't want to besmirch President Carter with Iran-Contra.
Well, and also in H.W. Bush, he got in trouble because of the read my lips line, and that just got played against him. I can't remember a guy a year out having this bad of polling numbers going into it. I mean, when was the last time you remember someone like that and then coming back and winning?
Well, and here's the – this is not a satisfying answer. By the way, check, because I think the House has just – or a House committee has voted to hold the Attorney General and Commerce Secretary in contempt. So that'll change your narrative for the day. I just saw that come through the last couple of minutes. The distinction from a historical standpoint, everything you laid out is true, but I am curious as to how many people voted in 2016 who are not traditional voters, as in not regular, predictable voters, and how many of them might show up a second time. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole thing that makes the Trump era so different, all right? Because we keep talking about traditional Republicans and Democrats, And by that, I'm not talking about very narrow. I mean, the Democrats have a very broad field running for president. And I say that not just because there's 23 of them, but you have a pretty wide philosophical spectrum there. But yet, you know, they're Democrats, all right, with the possible exception of Senator Sanders, but he clearly is trying to remake the party and doubling down on that, and others are following. This is different because, again, the Trump phenomenon and the people who voted who didn't vote before in certain states, and are they going to come back? And so I would concur, if you look historically, you don't come back from this kind of a deficit. Mm-hmm. But I also remember that H.W. Bush had sky-high approval ratings a year before his election. The economy cratered, and he lost. Mm-hmm. And again, on paper, you wouldn't have seen it. So my only thought is there are 23 Democrats, and I'm not convinced we're done, but 23 Democrats who think the tea leaves lay out in favor of a Democrat, therefore why not them? That is absolutely accurate. I'm just saying, you know, nobody ought to be measuring for drapes in the Oval yet.
Well, and it's twofold, because not only do you have to have the Trump voters that show up again, but you have to have that 110 million registered voters who didn't vote stay at home again. And that's as we fair. saw in 2018, I don't know if that's going to be a pretty big reversal if that does happen.
That's fair.
Jeff Stein joining us. We'll take a break. Come back. I want to talk quickly. We'll get into that breaking news, but the census stuff. I don't know where Trump thinks he's going to go with that, because I think we all know what's going on with that census stuff. But we'll talk about the fact that he has basically told them that not to give the stuff to the House and Senate. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. On June 16th, say thanks, Dad, with the Park Tavern. From 11 until 2, it's the Father's Day Barbecue Buffet. St. Louis-style ribs, barbecue chicken, grilled burgers with all the fixings, corn, watermelon, all the sides, and dessert, too. Dad gets a free pint of beer and a T-shirt, and there's an hour of free bowling with your reservation. $20.95 for adults, $14.95 for seniors, $10.95 for kids, and 5 and under are free. On Louisiana Avenue, north of Highway 7 in St. Louis Park, on June 16th, say I love you, Dad, with the Father's Day Barbecue Buffet at the Park Tavern.
This is Ellie Krug from Ellie 2.0 Radio on Mondays from 7 to 8 a.m. Many listeners know that I founded Human Inspiration Works, LLC, which trains on human inclusivity and on how to be welcoming, diverse humans. Today, organizations of all sizes find that they need to train team members on diversity and inclusion. I can do that. Many say that my trainings change the way they see the world. I'd love to help make your organization more welcoming. For more information, go to humaninspirationworks.com. Thank you.
Pride Weekend is almost here, and there is something for everyone. From the Friday Night Beer Dabbler on the 21st, featuring 50 local brewers, to Pride in Concert on Saturday, June 22nd in Loring Park with the headliner TLC. And you can't forget about the Rainbow Run leading into the Ashley Rooks Pride Parade on Sunday, June 23rd. This is a festival and celebration you do not want to miss. Get your tickets now. VIP is still available with free food and drinks. Go to tcpride.org. That's tcpride.org. We'll see you there.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, I should mention, Karen in Richfield was the winner of our Todd Colet CD. Enjoy that CD there, Karen. We'll have one more to give away tomorrow here on AM 950. Jeff Stein is joining us. We're talking national politics. The White House ordered Bill Barr, Wilbur Ross to not hand over census information about the inclusion of a citizenship question on the 2020 census. And now, as a matter of fact, yes, House Oversight Committee holds Bill Barr and Wilbur Ross in contempt for stonewalling the census investigation, which is their right to do. The problem that the White House has is the story, I think it's out of North Carolina, of the Republican insider who basically wrote all about the fact that this is about racism. This is about stopping, you know, the census question will stop the minorities from responding, henceforth hurt Democrats. It will help Republicans. We now know this because his daughter, after he died, got all the hard drives and all the stuff from his documents and handed it over to investigators. Needless to say, it's we know that is where this all came from now. So there's not a real big mystery, yet still the White House is trying to play a game where they're trying to keep this hidden. And unless the Supreme Court basically says, okay, the entire Constitution needs to be thrown out, there's no way in the world they're going to be able to stop it, correct?
Well, you might get 5-4 vote on that some days. But I'm going to go a little rogue on you with this one. And I think that this is an attempt by the Trump administration lawyers to test some theories on executive privilege in court on matters that really don't matter and just get a sense of how the courts are feeling and what the arguments are going to be before they invoke it in something that really matters. Because, for example, we used to have these questions in the census, sort of, then we didn't, and it's clear whether you have the smoking gun documents or not. It has to do with disparate impact. This may be a facially neutral change in questions, but if it has the disparate impact, the discriminatory impact of people not participating, the court doesn't need the smoking gun. Does it help? Sure. But the point is that I think what they're doing is they're going to test the waters of executive privilege, daring the Democrats to fight, see what the courts do, not caring a whit about the census, but using it as a framework for something later that might be more nefarious that they do care about.
Well, and then let's bring in the other subject into this. Okay, say you're a judge. Mm-hmm. You finally, some of these cases come to your lap February, March of next year, when it's clear, say, Trump is running only 36%, and it's clear that he's going to need a miracle to get a reelection. Does it start crossing your mind that the standards you're setting could be for, if you are a Republican judge, and let's just call it what it is, Republican judge, that you're setting a standard that could end up hurting you in the long run because a Democratic president might be able to use your ruling against your party trying to investigate them?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, a good judge will be able to first, they should set aside the partisanship, but secondly, they certainly could recognize the impact. Absolutely would recognize the impact because of the stare decisis and precedent means you follow that precedent. And, you know, it's what's good for the goose is good for the gander. We've seen it over and over in the U.S. Senate, which has a different set of rules that they just change on a whim. But to your point, of course, you're going to get a judge who may be of a more conservative bent, who's going to issue a ruling in a fact-based case that's going to be precedent for other fact-based cases, and it's a trap. Absolutely is.
Well, and when you look at it, if it looks like Trump is going to lose, and there is a leadership vacuum at the top of that Republican Party right now, you know, the question then is, who am I loyal to? If I'm loyal to the party, I got to think about what's best for the party because this is starting to look like the Whigs all over again at that point. Once again, Jeff Stein, Next Chapter Books, you'll find his books over there. I will get that Iowa Politics Report posted up for everyone to listen to a little bit later on. Okay, Jeff?
And I will send you the full list. And I'm so glad you got a Whig reference.
It's the Whigs, man. They were wow. All right. Hey, Jeff, we'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Yeah. Have a good afternoon. Hunter's in next. We are back tomorrow. Until then, see ya.